Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm Robbie, he's Kyle, and we're your hosts today on this, our penultimate rewatch episode in what we have been calling our Friends from Work Infinity Saga. We're going to be covering Endgame Part 1. Kyle, how are you feeling?
I have a lot of mixed feelings today, Robbie. I watched Avengers Endgame last night and a lot of feeling just kind of rushed over me and hit me. And I'm thinking, man, I'm sentimental, I'm nostalgic, I'm thankful. You know, like when you and I started talking about possibly doing a podcast about this, like we're nobody special. We just were two guys that were really passionate about these films. And I'm thinking like all the way back to late August, we didn't even know if we were going to do a rewatch, but we're like, you know what? If we're going to do this podcast, let's really do it. Let's go all out. So we wrote our own theme for it. We started recording a lot of episodes. We decided to go back through all the movies. And it's just kind of crazy to be sitting here today now, like thinking about all that stuff, you know? And the fact that we said we're going to do this regardless if anyone is listening or not. And now we're getting to this last movie in the rewatch, and we have people that listen and care about what we say and share their feedback with us. And I don't know, it's just made me very, very thankful. I know I say that a lot, but I truly mean that. This has been so fun for you and I. Like, we're not doing this for any other reason other than it's just been so fun for you. It's just really been a special thing. And for some reason, I think watching the movie last night, it's not just the end of the Infinity Saga, which makes me sad, but also proud and thankful. It's kind of the end of our first season. It just, I don't know, I have a lot of mixed feelings.
Which I think is pretty appropriate for a movie like this, because I think this movie, it's not that I had mixed feelings about it, but I think that it spurs a lot of different emotions. Like, I think one of the things that this movie does that no other film in the MCU does, in the same way, is just cover a gamut of emotional states.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I can't think of another Marvel movie that takes you, it's not just the highs and lows. It's like, I was thinking about it last night and there just is not, like, there's not a ton of action in this movie.
Right. It's crazy. Like, very little, actually.
Comparatively, right? Especially compared to Infinity War, which, again, I love because we have Infinity War, right? So it's like, I like that this movie is different in that way, but it is a very, like, you kind of sit in it and there's this bittersweet melancholy about it whenever I watch Endgame. But, gosh, I love it so much.
It's human nature, though. For every thing that I get so passionate about, there's always this fight between I actually need it to end because the ending makes things somewhat beautiful.
Right.
But it also is still a sad thing for it to be done and for you to be closing a chapter on your life. You know, like, yeah. I know they're just movies. So I know that sounds funny for me to say, but it still hits me in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, this is the closing of a chapter.
You can't help but remember where you were when Iron Man 1 came out and how long ago that was. Right. And in a way, you feel like you've taken a journey, just like these actors probably feel like they've right. given their life to doing this, you know? And yeah, well, so I just, the movie itself, and we're going to talk about this once we get into it, but the first time I watched this movie, I've said this before, but I was so anxious because I knew it was the end and I didn't know how to feel about it. And so like I was on edge, and therefore the on edge was kind of my guard toward the emotional impact of it.
Right.
So I left like feeling very unsettled. Like I said, like, you know, my favorite thing was now done and that made me sad. And Tony Stark dies, which is another thing that really just gets me.
Right.
But then I went and saw it again, and it was way better for me the second time because my guard was down. But to be totally honest with you, all of these rewatches, I've probably seen the movie 4 or 5 times. Every time I've watched it, I almost a little bit in the back of my head have talked myself into saying this is one of the best movies they've ever made. Because I can look at it and say, I know it's one of the best movies they've ever made, but I still have never had that connection with it yet. I just right. still hadn't.
Right.
And last night, I had it. Like, to the most extreme degree. It's hard to explain, but
yeah.
Last night it was like my eyes were finally open to this film. I think the rewatch helped with that. I think my guard was finally down on this movie. And uh-huh. I think because it's been a year since it came out, my sadness of it just being over has passed a little bit. So time has healed that wound. So this was more just like looking back at like a photo book or something
right.
that I could just enjoy it. And all of the things that were supposed to get me, the humor, the drama, the struggle they have, all of the specific points we're going to get into just resonated. It would have shot up my rankings list today if I was just going on experiences of watching it.
But it was already near the top, so it didn't have a ton to
shoot.
It was
already near the top, but it was kind of like half my brain saying you have to do that. That's what I'm trying to say. It wasn't like Infinity War has had my heart and my brain from day one.
Right.
Right. So as Guardians, this was like always been a struggle. Like I know it's up there, but I struggle because I don't enjoy it as much yet until right. the other night.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting for us somewhat in this episode, but maybe more so in our wrap-up episode to kind of compare and contrast Infinity War and Endgame, right? Because I had such a different reaction to each of those movies. And they're written by the same people, directed by the same people, obviously starring the same people, have the same villain. It's like
filmed at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, right. But they feel so different to me. And it's just it's crazy. And it makes it so hard to quantify. And I know that's like one of the big questions that I'm excited for us to get to is where do you right. rank, which one do you rank higher? And it almost feels a little bit like apples and oranges sometimes, you know?
It sometimes feels like I'm shortchanging the other, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right.
And they're different. They're just different. I want to get into it because yeah, I yeah. have a lot of specifics that will back up my point I just made. And again, this is going to be so fun. I'm just so thankful for all of you. So we're going to be pausing this part one right when we would consider act two, quote unquote, to start. So this will actually be a little bit shorter than the second half. But we feel like the most appropriate time to pause this episode is right when they're starting the time travel. So just as a right. heads up before we get there. So that part two will then cover the time travel stuff and the final battle stuff.
Yep.
So, Robbie, why don't you give us our normal intro this last time?
Oh, man.
Give us our normal intro to Avengers Endgame, please, without tearing up.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I can do that. I'll give an intro,
okay.
though.
okay, fair.
All right, Avengers Endgame, as we know, was released in 2019, directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, and written by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, which, for us, I feel like actually resonates. And I'm going to say this over and over again through the movie, especially in part two, but having started our rewatch with Captain America, the First Avenger, this feels so much like it's finishing so much of the work that movie started, at least for me. And of course, I'm kind of a little biased because I love that movie, but it feels like Marcus and McFeely are really taking us on a tour through the entire MCU, but you see them giving some little love letters, some shout outs to the films that they've written. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about Thor 2, and we'll talk about that in part two of the episode as well. But I do love the full circle part of the Marcus McFeely stuff here that I'm sure we'll get into. The cast is, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Hemsworth, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner as our six main Avengers. We also have Don Cheadle and Paul Rudd making big appearances here. Karen Gillan, Danai Gurira, Benedict Wong, Bradley Cooper, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Josh Brolin as Thanos.
I had read somewhere that there was 19 actors or actresses in this film alone, 19 that have either been nominated or won an Academy Award. Jeez. 19 in the same movie.
Man, that's insane. And of course, we have to talk about the music here, Kyle, by yes. Alan Silvestri, which again, in terms of the full circle, you know, we come back to some of the themes, some of the tones that Silvestri helped kick us off with on Captain America: The First Avenger. This movie obviously broke a ton of records. It grossed nearly $2.8 billion worldwide.
It is currently the highest grossing movie of all time.
Right.
And it will be a very tough record to break because of how many films led up to this point. The anticipation was as high as I can ever remember anything. And I said that in the time. The only thing I could think of that rivaled it was when The Force Awakens was going to come out because Star Wars was rebooting, basically. Right. But I think Endgame passed that. Like, there was literally millions of people dying over 10-second clips on TV during the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like, people were watching the Super Bowl to see a 10-second something, you know? I don't know that it'll ever be replicated.
Well, and I think what's really interesting about this movie to me, just anecdotally, is how many people I've talked to that saw this 3 or 4 times literally in theaters.
Which obviously plays into the grossing of it,
right,
you know?
Right.
But yes, I think there's just so much. There's so much with the time travel. And then, like, when you finally get that scene that resonates with every human being ever at the end, there's also so much there with reunions and battles that you can, like, pick up on other details in the background that you just never even noticed.
Right.
So it just, in that way, it's very rewatchable.
Which is just crazy because it is a 3-hour movie.
I know.
So to go see a 3-hour movie that many times in theaters, and the people that I'm talking about are not even hardcore MCU fan friends of mine. They're just people that I would have considered to be kind of casual watchers. And I think that's another thing that just gave this movie a ton of legs on the box office front. But I think even more than that, what we've kind of hinted at implicitly and explicitly through the whole season is just that this movie did something that no other movie has ever done, in that it wraps up, like you said, 22 films. It does so in a very unique way, I think. And it does so in a way that not only garnered critical praise, I mean, this is one of the critically more well-received MCU films ever. Obviously, it did well commercially. Also, fans have tended to love this movie. Like, it's like, I think it balanced.
I just can't get over what you just said. I can't get over what you just said. I need our audience to wrap their mind around that. It has 94% critically on Rotten Tomatoes. And I had even read some people say that this was only the second perfect movie they'd ever seen. But then also, audiences gave it an A+ cinema score. An A+.
Right.
And on top of all of that, it's the highest grossing movie of all time. So people are rewatching and people are thinking they need to go see it. And all of that is with the backdrop of the fact that it had to carry the weight of these other films.
Right.
It seems like an impossible task, but it worked. I don't know how else to say it. That's why we're doing this podcast, because this movie came out and we couldn't believe that this worked. And so we thought, we need to talk about this. What are they doing that makes us feel so strongly for these characters? And apparently the rest of the world as well is feeling this way.
And so here we are. We've come back to it. This is how we started the podcast, talking about Endgame, and this is how we're going to end this first season. So do you want to get into it?
Yes, one last thing on the box office front. It's the only movie ever to gross $1 billion on its opening weekend. Think about that. Opening weekend, $1 billion. There's only a few movies that have ever grossed $1 billion, period. Also, I thought this would be fun, and I haven't told you this yet, but I jotted down the name of every Marvel film so far in our rewatch order, okay? And I want you, at any point in the movie, I've never done this, at any point in the movie, when we get a shout-out, an Easter egg, or a reference to one of these movies, stop me, even if I'm talking, and I'm going to put a check mark. And I'm going to see how many specific check marks on this watch friends from work can find that they are referencing. How many movies do we get Easter eggs from, okay?
Okay, okay.
So if you see one, stop me, and I'm going to check
it. Oh, I like this game. Okay.
There might be some I'm missing. Right. And then I think what will be fun is if I am missing some, our listeners can find them and let me know if I miss some.
Oh, and they will. They will.
And they will. All right, Robbie, are you ready, baby? Avengers Endgame, here we go. Live watch commentary. Can't wait.
All right, let's do it.
If you're going to be watching the movie with us, you can hit play when we count down from three. So here we go. Our movies are set to 0-0-0. And 3, 2, 1, let's go, baby. Avengers Endgame, hit play. Let's do this. This first scene, Robbie, did you know this first scene with Hawkeye was actually originally planned to be shown during Infinity War?
Oh, I totally believe that.
Yeah, it totally has that vibe. But if you remember, the audiences have had a calendar year up until this point. So I think the directors thought it'd be better here for them to use it as like a reminder of the stakes of Infinity War and kind of change the tone right away back to that. So I think it's better here ultimately, but just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's such a powerful way to open this up. In terms of, we talked a lot about the way Infinity War starts just on such a dark tone. And again, this starts on such a dark tone, but in a way more emotional, kind of less epic, more intimate way. Mm-hmm. I also love that we right off the bat get that shot of Clint's ankle monitor.
Oh.
As kind of our first, you know, yeah, you were talking about shout out Easter egg moments, little Civil War shout out.
Okay, there's my first check mark for Civil War. There it is, first check mark. I do love that it reminds us of those stakes as well, you know?
Right.
It's not just left out there. Also, did you know that that's actually Joe Russo, the director, his daughter? That's who's the actress there. Hawkeye's daughter.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Super cool. One thing I love about Jeremy Renner's performance here is that when he's trying to figure out what's happening, oh, and chills when they disappear again. When he's trying to figure out what's happening, there's like a look of anger on his face, like a father that needs to protect. And I love that that's a good foreshadowing of how he's going to deal with this failure. Robbie, this movie to me is so genius because superheroes by nature, right, are unrelatable and untouchable and all this stuff. But this movie deals with how do all of those superheroes deal with failure, which we've never really seen before? Like if they have to sit in failure, what are their each individual reactions to it? And so I'm going to be saying that so often in this movie, and we'll get there. But with Hawkeye, he chooses to kind of freak out and go on this like anger killing spree like that he thinks is just. But I love that that's a little foreshadowing there, that look on his face.
Which I also love in terms of the contrast or like the role reversal between him and Black Widow and what we know about her from earlier in her history. Let's talk about Dear Mr. Fantasy and this Marvel card transition into our first scene with Tony and Nebula. I love that song. I think that it's such a weird move, but it perfectly shifts the tone, I think.
Yes. It was so unique the first time I saw it, and that is the point, I think, to tone shift. But also, the lyrics fit as well, which is crazy. They literally even say, make it snappy in the lyrics. Right. So,
this is one of those moments, too, that I love because everything happened so quickly in Infinity War. You know, we got some really great interactions that we had been looking for, like Tony and Doctor Strange. But to see Tony sitting across from
Nebula,
this alien, is such a surreal thing. But I love the way that they imagine that scene. I love the paper football thing. I think it's such a classic Tony personality scene.
Well, and Nebula, who's right, like never won a game or like a fair game where just shakes her hand, you know, that's so foreign to her. And there's a ton of that, Robbie, in this movie where you say to yourself, this is so cool that we can now just have these interactions. Like it's almost funny at times. Also, like I've done in the past, I got a chance to listen to the commentary from the Russos and Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, and it's so fun. One of the things that I took from it is they're so intentional with their editing, and we commented on that in Infinity War, but I think what's so important is like that first scene with Hawkeye is so dark and so somber. So then they intentionally, and this is what Marvel does so well, bring you right back to something more lighthearted, like playing football over Dear Mr. Fantasy with Nebula. You know, there's a very conscious effort, and I'll point out how often that happens.
I'm so glad you said that because that's a note that I made. The editing in this movie is just superb. Like,
and think about how many times they would have had to comb over it, you know?
Oh, right. Well, because you just have so much going on. And again, to do it in a way, in this movie, it's almost more impressive to me in some ways because of how delicate the tone here is. Yep. And so, I mean, this scene, you know, again, we're talking about the bouncing back and forth. This scene is famous from the first Endgame trailer that came out, but this is one of my favorite scenes of all time in the MCU. I think it's some great, great Robert Downey Jr. talking about kind of full circle moments. It's going back to this original relationship that the MCU kicked off with, at least in release order. And I feel this scene as much as I think I feel anything.
Totally. There's a lot of things that I'm going to find myself repeating. One of which is, yes, the performances in general. This is the peak version of all of these actors. I think because they get to play that vulnerable side of things, we're going to see just some like jaw-dropping performances. And the fun thing is we already now know and are invested in all of these characters because it's been all these years. So you so much resonate with all of them. So the fact that they can use that and push their performances even higher and further is incredible to me. I also want to say the score, dude. I don't know that I have as emotional of a reaction to any other movie as I do with this score married with this film. And again, Alan Silvestri, when I answered the mailbag question about what's my favorite score, I think I'm going to change my mind. I think it's Endgame. I really do. After watching it, there's more scenes where the music is so pivotal in this movie than almost any other in the MCU.
I've listened to the Endgame score more than any other score in the MCU, which says something, and, you know.
As a Iron Man fan, like right now, dude, this podcast might be hard for me to do in general because this movie makes me so emotional and I have it going in my other ear. But like this scene, I legit, again, I said this in Infinity War, I thought Tony was dying here.
Yeah.
And yes, that would have been a super bold decision. But remember that because we've had a year off, I thought maybe this is one way they were going to shock us. By killing Tony Stark right off the bat.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I was thinking the same thing, although I love the way that they introduce Captain Marvel here. And
it's great.
We've talked about how in our rewatch order, you know, like we've known Captain Marvel's out there. We got that really fun hint there at the end of Infinity War, but we've had no idea how she was going to come back into the fold and what she's been doing. And so this moment here of the light shining on his face is such an epic
And notice way. The subtlety, how the light slowly changes from that blue to the green, then to the yellow. So cool. Also, a little bit of foreshadowing is Tony gets a little glimpse of that real hero theme there as he's dying. And that song makes me so emotional. So that part always just gets me. Apparently, the director's also debated having Captain Marvel just show up with the ship right here as we're seeing Captain America shave his beard. No, don't shave your beard. It's so good. But apparently they decided not to do that because this would be a way more impactful. Like, again, we talk about these movies dealing with real stakes, not just individual films. They're actually picking up where we left off. Rob, how fun is it to think about, Tony was on a planet with a broken ship and Nebula. How else are they going to get off? And that's what's so genius. They don't just say, oh, by the way, Tony's back to Earth. They have to show us and explain it to us because it's very practical.
Right.
So I think it's actually a way better call to show us, you know, Captain Marvel probably went to the Avengers facility because of the pager. Remember yep. that? Got intel that Tony was still out there. Then we get to actually see her pick him up.
Right.
It's a subtle detail, but I really enjoy that about Marvel.
Oh, and this scene here, this is the first time we're seeing Tony and Steve together since Civil War, Kyle.
I know. We've asked the question in the past, is this reunion fulfilling enough? And Robbie, on this watch, I've never felt more fulfilled for these two than this rewatch.
Yep.
Like, there's so many good moments between them. They're subtle, but there's a lot of good ones, like right there.
Yep.
Tony, we lost, you know?
Mm. I was also so relieved to see Pepper there. I was so worried she was gone.
Well, and that's Tony's first question. He starts saying, is, you know, I think he's going to say, is Pepper here?
Right.
And here we go, Robbie. It's going to be...
Okay, so I've just got to say, yep. I think, and we toss around stuff like this, but legitimately, this is for me one of my top three scenes in maybe just ever of any movie. I love the scene so much, Kyle.
It's maybe the most impressive Robert Downey Jr. performance I've ever seen. Is that fair?
Yeah. And the reason I say that is it's just we've talked so much about these journeys that all of our characters have been on, but specifically Tony and Steve. And this is the culmination, and if we overuse that word, this really is the culmination of this conflict that they've been dealing with since they first met in Stuttgart in front of Loki. And it's so intense.
Oh. Tony, you fought him. Who told you that? Yeah, because it's so intense, but you got to understand, when you do the background work, like you're saying, this reaction is so understandable. Tony worked his whole life to prevent this from happening, and it happened. And he is now taking out his anger and his grief on Cap because Cap wasn't there. Now, that's not Cap's fault.
No,
but Tony is mad, and he has nothing left. Like, this is what Tony looks like when he's at the end of his road. He tried everything. Right. There's no secret gadget, right? He doesn't have a secret missile they can shoot at Thanos. He has no plan anymore.
And what I've talked about before is I think you always get this sense that Tony and Cap look up to each other, but I think Tony looks up to Cap in a certain way because he was his dad's hero, and I think even though he won't admit it, he trusts him, and he's kind of his hero, and he really, truly felt abandoned and alone on Titan to have to fight without Cap. And this is him lashing out because Cap said, when we lose, we'll do that together too, and he wasn't there for him.
I got chills when he says, I love the line of him saying, we're the Avengers, right? Not the Prevengers. Like, that's our job is like after the fact. That's amazing dialogue. That's amazing line writing. Oh, liar.
Liar.
Ooh. Yeah. And this part is so chilling to me when he says, you take this and you hide. I want to get back to the point you said. I do think there's like actually a huge amount of respect there that Tony would never admit outwardly. But I think there's like a part of Tony that is attracted to Cap, like some qualities in him, and he's not going to say that.
Well, because they're so opposite. Like,
they're so opposite, right? So it's kind of like, you
know. But this just, it takes me back to that scene at the end of Age of Ultron where they're facing Ultron all at once and Iron Man says, you know, it's like the old man said, we'll do it together. And it is like, it's like he trusts Cap. It's this like, whenever it all comes down to it, you know, he's like, well, this is the guy. And I just think that it's so powerful that there in that moment, he felt so let down by these people that had been telling him forever that he could trust them. And in the end, he couldn't.
Right. He couldn't. I'm going to count that as my Age of Ultron reference because he does bring up that exact line. So check mark that.
Right, right.
There are two lines in this entire movie that I don't like either the writing of it or the performance of it. I'm going to point them out, okay? One of them is about to come up.
Okay.
I'm maybe too hard on Captain Marvel, so I got to be careful. But I got to give her a little bit of credit here because I don't know if you know this. This is actually the first thing she ever filmed as Captain Marvel. Isn't that crazy?
No way.
Before her movie, this is her having to act. So she has no context even of what Captain Marvel is going to be yet.
That's so hard. Yeah.
But when she says this line right here, when she says, unfortunately, they didn't have you guys, I just think she delivers it in the wrong way, Robbie. Huh. I think it comes off like she's almost being sarcastic. Like she's like almost like, oh, well, they don't have you guys, but you still failed. That's how it comes off, I think.
Right.
And I think she's actually genuinely meaning it sincerely. I think she means like, I really am sad that these other planets are dying because, you know, they don't have people like you to help.
Right.
Although, but sometimes it just, you know, comes off a little weird to me right there. So that's the only, that's one of two.
Okay, that's fair. Although I do think she, you know, she does have a little chip on her shoulder. She does know she's stronger, or at least thinks that she's stronger than anybody else in the room. I want
to
say,
I don't think it's meant to be sarcastic there. I don't think she's meaning to come in that guns a blazing.
That's fair. I wanted to point out that Thor there, you see, is already snacking and drinking a beer.
Yes. And not saying a single word, which is a genius way. Okay. So we talked about Hawkeye, and we're going to go more into Ronan in a second and how Hawkeye dealt with his failure. Now we're going to get to talk about how Thor deals with failure, right? And all these different reactions that people would have based on the background we already know. And this is, by the way, one of the coolest shots in the film. So we just got the title card, Avengers Endgame. And then I love this shot because we get to see Captain America, a World War II soldier going to space. So to see him like, to see him clenching his chair and that shot of his eye that's about to happen here in a second.
Yeah.
Going to, it's just, how cool is that, Robbie? You get to see Captain America in space. Like, this never thought it would happen.
Oh gosh. I never noticed that shot. That's a great shot. Like when it's reflected in his eye there. Yeah.
The Russos talk about that. That's one of their favorite shots of the whole movie.
Wow.
I just love the space travel, side of this all because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So it's fun to see these characters on that kind of scale. I said that before, but
so okay, my favorite Easter egg here is that Cap is wearing his Winter Soldier suit. Kyle, have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good
because his original suit or the suit that we saw him wear in Civil War, you know, has been battered. And so you have to imagine he just went for whatever suit he had in storage there. And on the one hand, so there's the Winter Soldier suit. On the other hand,
that's my Winter Soldier. Check mark. Got it.
On the other hand, it's kind of this idea that he doesn't necessarily view himself as an Avenger anymore. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, chills on this line from Nebula when she says, and that's enough.
Right.
I love that because Captain Marvel is kind of saying like, oh, it's just him. Like, we can go take him. And she's like, you have no idea. Like, that's enough. If he has no stones and is by himself, it's still going to be enough.
So I do want to say that they imagine it very differently. But I love that this scene is straight out of the Infinity Gauntlet comic that Jim Starlin wrote.
Really?
That Scarecrow scene is like a really iconic panel. And so it's just fun. I love when the MCU finds ways to do that.
Okay, I have so many thoughts about this intro. Can we talk on a big picture scale about something really important, I think?
Yeah.
For a year after Infinity War came out, people like you and I and MCU fans across the globe constantly were dialoguing and theorizing what is Endgame going to be about, right? They already lost. How can they reverse it? And I think the makers of this movie are aware of that, right? Because we've already seen that Thanos is literally unbeatable and he can't lose. And so to make a whole movie out of, hey, let's go try to fight him again with the stones, that maybe sounds kind of fun to see as far as watching them all battle. But that wouldn't be a very fulfilling story. We've already seen they cannot beat him. He's basically at this point, the director said this directly. They basically said, like, he's omniscient. He's almost omnipresent. He's all-powerful at this point. Like there's no battle that can, like, come together and fight him. And so I think it's crazy that the first 20 minutes of this film, Robbie, and we talked about this, is basically the movie we thought we were going to get. But instead, it's condensed to 20 minutes, right? They go find Thanos, and they come in here, and they fight him, and they kill him.
And the bait
and
switch.
That's what we thought the movie was going to be for 3 hours.
The bait and switch even comes down to these subtle moments where whenever you first see the Hulkbuster suit bust up through the ground, you see Thanos raising the gauntlet, and they make it look like he's using the gauntlet.
Oh, gosh, chills. Yep. By the way, Robbie, I literally counted. I say chills a lot. I got chills 27 different times watching this movie last night. Legit, 27. So be prepared. That. But yeah, that is a good bait and switch. I noticed that in this watch. It looks like he's about to pull the Power Stone again and go to town.
Yep.
I love this connection he has with Nebula here. And I love that Nebula says, I know that my father is not a liar. That's the one thing she knows.
Oh, and there Thor goes. He goes for the head.
And the blood splatters. I thought this was always interesting, Rob, because to me, that moment right there of Thor chopping off his head is so powerful and so moving. And in a way, if you're emotionally like ready for it, so depressing.
Yeah.
Because that's going to kick off his depression. It makes so much sense. He has nothing left. He thought that would fulfill him, and it just doesn't. Like, it's empty. Right. You've already lost. That was just pure vengeance. Like, that was not a good thing at all.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think it was uncomfortable for audiences and like so shocking that some people laughed at that line. And I think it's like more nervous laughter. My theater laughed, and I've been seeing it on audience reactions.
Oh, interesting.
And the directors again commented on that people laughed there, and that was, they never meant that to be funny, that he went for the head.
Oh, I've never heard people laugh during that. That's interesting.
100%. Yeah. Watch the commentary. I think it's more of a nervous laughter because that was so shocking. But that moment is so big and moving. It's not funny. Yes. 5 years later.
That was the moment in theaters where my jaw was on the floor. I knew that we had talked about some time travel things leading into this movie. I never thought we would be jumping 5 years in the future.
Chills. What a shock that was, Robbie. You see how slowly they bring that up 5 years later.
Jeez.
As a point of like, yeah, it was so shocking. I'm with you. It was so shocking when it happened. Again, that moment, the first 20 minutes, that's what I thought the whole movie was. Maybe mix in some time travel and all that to try to reverse what he did.
I didn't realize.
I didn't realize they were going to have to deal with their emotions for 5 years. But that's the point. This sets up that human nature side of it, because now we're going to get to see an hour and a half of them just being so vulnerable and dealing with it in different ways.
Right. Man, and
here's our Rousseau cameo, by the way.
Right. Which this is just another great classic Cap scene. I mean, what I was really looking for in this movie is, you and I have kind of had this conversation recently about, did Captain America die in Civil War to be replaced by Steve Rogers, quote unquote? Like,
he's kind of been reborn here.
I think in Endgame, we start to, I think he starts to be reborn. Like, I think it's interesting how even that scene where he confronts Thanos, he's not wearing the Cap helmet. You know, like he's wearing the Winter Soldier costume. So it's not his kind of like Star Spangled costume. And we don't really see him back in full Cap mode until the end of this movie when he's back with the Avengers. And I think that that's powerful too.
I do love that you get to see his speeches again. He's back to his like good-hearted, do what we can. Like this line right here is amazing. If we don't do something, Thanos should have killed all of us. But what's amazing in Evans's performance is like he doesn't 100% believe it for himself.
Right.
He's doing these classes for other people to move on, and he can't move on, right?
I was just so struck in this movie. Chris Evans is such a good actor. Like
He's such a good actor. I've been saying this from
day one, right? Like, this does not take away from Robert Downey Jr. at all, but I think Captain America is such a hard character to compellingly play. And Chris Evans makes it just riveting for me.
Again, chills to the maximum ever just thinking about those two characters, how they were acted, and where their stories start from and where they end up. And it's wild to see now we're getting a little bit of a glimpse of Chris Evans playing Captain America, kind of like his first Captain America, a little bit, kind of working back into that after everything he's been through. We got to talk about this rat.
We do have to talk about the rat.
Well, because it's a very controversial thing amongst fans, and the writers have admittedly just said it was a coincidence, right? It's just straight up a coincidence. There's no other weirdness to that. But I want everyone to just calm down. First of all, it's in the first 23 minutes of the movie. Second of all, remember this, okay? And a listener actually wrote us this. It's been 5 years, so at some point, a coincidence can happen, right? It's not like it happened one day later. It's been 5 years. So to me, it makes sense. Eventually, something can happen like that, okay?
Right.
So just stop making it a big deal, everybody.
But they have said that that is part of what makes this one in the 14 million, right?
Well, exactly. It's super crazy random, and it's, you know, but get over it. It's a coincidence, and that's what happened, okay? I think what's so fitting about this, Robbie, as we're seeing Ant-Man kind of like just piecing together what's happening.
Right.
I think it's especially appropriate coming from Paul Rudd because he's always been such a comedic actor in this.
Yeah.
And to see someone who doesn't take anything seriously have to take this so seriously makes it more powerful to me.
Yeah.
And it just shows Paul Rudd's crazy skill.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's fun, you know, seeing the fact that he's always been in San Francisco, seeing it from there rather than from the New York perspective where everybody else is. But I think, I mean,
you know, I love seeing them having to deal with, again, the ramifications, right? Like a practical thing, like there's a memorial now set up. That's so cool.
Right, right. I never loved the moment between him and that kid with the wagon. I don't think it's bad. It's not one that hits me in the way that I feel like it's supposed to, just in terms of things that don't like quite do it for me. I don't know if you feel that way.
Have never had a strong feeling one way or the other. So this track right here, this audio check,
yes,
while he's running to his house is so good. This moment's pretty powerful. And I think Rudd's performance here again makes it, just sells the whole scene.
This moment's very powerful.
Watch his face as he is so confused of who this is, but also putting it together and so sad that he's missed out on 5 years of his daughter.
Gosh.
Right? Think about that. Like, there's so much going on here. You know, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely always say scenes have to do more than one thing.
Yes. You know? Yes, and I'm so glad you said that.
How often these scenes are doing more than one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this look that Paul Rudd's giving here. Ugh. And the soundtrack, again I'm just going to say the score. Yeah. Exactly, the score paired with this acting. I just think this movie allows for a different level of performance from them. I mean, there's been good acting in all the movies. I'm not saying that. But because they get to show this vulnerable side, it's like next level.
Yeah. You know what I find really interesting about this movie is, on the one hand, it's so adult. And what I mean by that is, like, it's dealing with some very mature, like, emotional themes.
Right. But, like, you would think kids would not like this movie at all.
Right, right. But I was going to say, at the same time, like, the way it's edited, the way that the story is told is so comic book event-esque that it's kind of crazy that, like, we've come to this place in 2019 when this movie's released that, like, this critically acclaimed comic book movie no longer has to pretend to be anything other than a comic book movie. Like, it really is paying homage to the art form that it's come from. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. I want to take this second to point out my first time of many points coming up that A, Scarlett Johansson is unbelievable. So her performance here is her best ever. And, well, maybe not ever, but for the MCU.
Right,
and secondly, that this is how Nat is dealing with this trauma, right? She finally had found a family, this Avengers crew. Now it's decimated, and really, she has nothing left to do. Like, I love that line of Nat, we're handling it by not handling it. Basically, there's nothing to do anymore. Like, we lost, you have to move on, and she can't move on.
Right.
Because this is all she has. Which again makes her death so much more powerful. If Clint had died, you're robbing her of that moment. This is her whole life, you know?
Right. Right.
And we're starting to see that here at this acting with her crying about Clint, but then when Steve is going to show up and try to get her to move on and they both haven't moved on, it's such a unique connection there, you know? Ugh. But I appreciate her performance, and I appreciate how her character is handling the failure.
Right. I also think someone will probably point out to us, if we don't point out, there is that line there from Okoye about the earthquake, you know, in the ocean. And I think a lot of folks have taken that to be an early reference to Atlantis, to bring Namor and the Submariner into the MCU, who has generally had kind of a big relationship with Black Panther. So that's something we should drop here and see if that plays out.
Good call. I love her acting there when she's full out weeping and then right. Steve walks in and she takes this huge breath like, okay, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I love this because this is
doesn't
just
this
such
warm
this
your
great,
heart so much?
It does because again, like so much of this movie is it's like giving us all these moments, all of these, not necessarily moments of closure, but it's like every relationship that we've grown to care about is given the proper amount of service. And this is one of my favorite relationships through the entire Marvel Studios run. And I've talked to you about how glad I am that they didn't make this a romantic relationship,
yep.
that they're just such good friends that just look out for each other. And
I
here they are
just
caring for each other.
Yeah, I just got chills in a moment that I never get chills in, which is, again, Chris Evans acting there.
Yeah.
When he sits down and starts talking to her, he's so conflicted because, again, like I said, he can't move on. Robbie, how unbelievably fulfilling is it that Tony Stark starts as the selfish billionaire who, even back to the first Avengers, Cap says, you know, you're not the guy to make the sacrifice play. You won't lay down
right,
the wire.
Right.
And Tony says to Cap, everything special about you came out of a bottle. And how unbelievably fitting is it that Tony is going to come full circle and become such a family man that he's scared to lose that side of it
right.
for his daughter and for his wife. And he has to make the sacrifice play for the greater good of the entire galaxy. And Steve comes full circle that he finally needs some self-actualization work, right? Like he
right.
grows as a human and gets, quote, some of that life Tony's been telling him about because
Gosh.
He finally has to stop doing that. He has to stop being so selfless and invest in himself a little bit, right? And
right.
everything special came out of a bottle. Then how in the world does Steve wield Mjolnir, right?
Right, right,
in that
right.
scene proving not everything that came out of a bottle, or not everything special came out of a bottle for him. It's just,
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Genius, Robbie. It's literally
yeah.
genius.
So I don't know if you've put your check next to Ant-Man and the Wasp yet.
Yep, here we go.
How
can we also comment on the fact that he drove across country in that van
right,
from San Francisco?
Also, how amazing is it that Marcus and McFeely took Ant-Man... these movies that we've talked about how they're generally so disconnected from what else is going on and made it so central to the finale of the entire Infinity Saga.
I know. Oh, it's unbelievable. Also, mixing in some comedy with this peanut butter sandwich line is so
yes.
good. He follows, I think the point of the joke is he's... the peanut butter sandwich line follows like a crazy intense line about quantum realm, right?
Right.
He's like,
right.
Can I have that sandwich? And he's so hungry. Paul Rudd is special too. Chris Evans is special.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson is special. They have an embarrassment of riches to work with. Do you realize that?
Yeah. This movie especially too.
Other movies die just to have one of these people.
Right. Also, and I noticed on this rewatch for the first time, I love the way they introduce the concept of time travel in here, where he says, what if you could enter into the quantum realm at one point in time and exit at another point in time? Like, I just think that's such a creative way. For, like, I know they then make a joke where it's like, oh, are you talking about time travel? But it's like the way that this movie conceives of time travel, whether or not you think that all of the logical consistency is there, I think is so unique and so interesting, and for something that could totally be a trope and that's been done to death, I
yep.
think it's so impressive the way that they really flipped the script on that.
They were really, really, really hesitant to do time travel because of all the reasons you just stated, you know?
Right.
But when they made like a pros and cons list, some of the pros that you get from doing time travel far, far, far outweighed any cons. One of the cons being they have to kind of explain what they're doing, like overtly, like have Ant-Man right there explain his theory.
Right.
But how they handle it every time the exposition has to happen is so seamless that you don't realize they're doing it.
And generally does pretty that make funny sense? Because of the way that Paul Rudd helps us out there.
Right. So I think that's all very intentional. You know?
So something that I want to point out is we get really, you could argue three, but really two scenes between Morgan and Tony.
But they're so freaking moving. Is that what you're going to say?
Yes, they're so moving. What I was, you know, what you said earlier about Marcus McFeely, like they are so great in terms of economy. Like it's like whenever they write a scene, that scene does so much work. Like there's no waste. Right.
And it has to cover so much ground. So it's so, so sparing on what they can put where.
Yeah. And you just get these two little interactions. And by the end of the movie, we're just having our hearts broken over this relationship.
Devastated. Yep.
So impressive.
Also, I know everyone knows this. This is common knowledge. It's not a hot take. But Robert Downey Jr. is a special human being. And his performance here is special. This is the one person that it bums me out he didn't get nominated for an award for his acting. Yes, it's a superhero movie. Yes, it's about time travel. But we can't miss these interpersonal interactions and how good they are.
Right.
It's not just a given, Robbie. That's my point, that they're just going to be good at it. He's so good at it.
No, I think you're so right. I mean, and if you watch enough non-MCU and even in some cases MCU superhero movies, you see a lot where it's like, oh, this is fun superhero stuff, but it's just not like, it's not great for whatever reason. Maybe the writing's like meh, but a lot of times it is the acting where you're like, it's not that they're phoning it in, but hey, it's an action movie. You know, they're kind of doing what you expect them to do. And right. I think it's such a pity that people look at these movies as kind of guilty pleasures or just sort of like popcorn fun. They can be that, sure. And I don't want to say that they're not fun to watch. They obviously are. But yeah, you're so right. Like what I was saying with Evans, with RDJ, and majorly with Chris Hemsworth in this movie. Like they're doing some really, really great acting work here. Like phenomenal acting work here.
Yep. Heavy lifting. I love that line when Nat says, Tony, we have to make a stand. He right away says, we did. And here we are. Like, we lost. I don't know what to tell you. I tried everything I had, you know? And I love this line that's about to come up. It's super, super subtle. But Captain America says, he's not wrong. Because Ant-Man says, oh, he's scared, you know? And he says, well, he's not wrong. It's an acknowledgement from Captain America that Tony, like, he gets why Tony doesn't want to do this. He cannot risk losing his life or his daughter or going back in time and erasing that even happened.
Right.
Right. And I love that he says he's not wrong because Cap gets it. That's why he doesn't badger him more. He's like, it doesn't make Cap mad. You know what I'm saying?
Well, because I think he understands what's at stake. And ultimately, he is right. I mean, Tony's right. He's the one that loses big on this.
Okay, shifting gears 100%. Again, talking about tonal change, Robbie, did you notice that edit?
Yes,
which went from a very heavy, serious moment of it's not going to work to Professor Hulk. And on this viewing, I wasn't just neutral to Professor Hulk. I actually loved it, Robbie. I think I legit prefer it. It just makes so much sense. Think about this. You know, they finally had like some kind of dialogue, Banner and the Hulk in Infinity War.
Right.
And did you know,
after us seeing the Hulk have a real personality in Ragnarok?
Right. That, again, Hulk is a personality in there. It's not just another version of Banner, right? Did you see that there's a deleted scene actually of Banner revealing Professor Hulk to Nat in Infinity War? Did you know that?
No way.
Crazy. And I'm going to send it to you, and I'll send it to our viewers if they want to see it. And it wouldn't have worked as well. They debated at the very end of Infinity War, Hulk walks out, and Nat goes like, sun's getting low, and is going to calm him. And he says, hey, Natasha, you don't have to do that anymore. And she's startled, like, what the heck? Like, because Hulk's talking in English, right? And I like what they were trying to do, but they basically said at the end of Infinity War, there was just too much going on to, like, have this crazy bombshell. And the point I'm trying to make, though, is that they did explain that there was a compromise made. That's what Professor Hulk was supposed to be. That Banner and Hulk got together and made a compromise to merge.
Right.
And that makes way more sense that he's had 5 years to do that.
Yeah.
Than at the end of Infinity War really quickly, right?
No,
but yeah,
after
he did that in Infinity War in the deleted scene, he was supposed to then just dominate the villain he was fighting. So that would have been weird, right?
Yeah, I feel like I'm so, because I've heard these little things and I understand all of them, but I'm so grateful for the way Infinity War ended and the way that they shoved off a lot of that stuff, even though I know that it must have made it more challenging on a storytelling front and Endgame, just because I think that really adding anything else on to that moment or taking away from that porch moment would have been a terrible, terrible mistake.
Yeah, and apparently they showed that scene I'm talking about to test audiences, and it really didn't work. So that helped them back that off.
I'm glad you said that about Hulk too, because I do like the idea that it's not just Banner's brain and Hulk's body. I like the idea that there is, you do see some of the Hulk personality
right.
that we got That's in Ragnarok I mean. Show up. Yeah.
Right. But also the directors commented on how unbelievable of a performance it was from Mark Ruffalo, because if you notice, he intentionally plays Professor Hulk a little bit differently than Banner.
Right.
It's not just a big version of Banner. He's
right.
trying to play like a merged character who, if you notice, is a little more kind of confident, like has Hulk's
yeah.
ego a little bit, if you will, not Banner's insecurities.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it
no,
is
totally.
A good performance.
Yeah.
Like there's subtleties to it that he would not have been able to do if it was just Hulk smash.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a little goofier. Again, like what we saw come up with the interactions between him and Valkyrie in Ragnarok when he was Hulk.
Right, and he has a little more confidence. He has some
yeah.
jokes now. It's just so fun. It makes the movie fun to me.
Right.
Like, again, a lot of Hulk smashing to me wouldn't be that fun. But I mean, I am sensitive to the people that were, you know, that love Hulk smash. But it's just, to me, it makes it a better story. We got to talk about this, Tony solving time travel.
Yes.
And again, so this is the second of what, two or three scenes with his daughter. And yet the chemistry there is so good.
Yes. I mean, this scene is kind of the heart and soul of the movie in a lot of ways.
I think, again, just take a picture of how far Tony Stark has come to have this scene with his daughter. Think about
right.
Iron Man 1 Tony, or Iron Man 2 Tony.
Iron Man 2 Tony, yeah.
Like, can you imagine him having this kind of moment? No, and that's what makes this so good. And also what makes him not being able to help understandable. He can't
right.
lose what he's gained. As he says later.
Well, when talking about Iron Man 2, I mean, think about the way how loud and colorful and big he was in that movie, and now how quiet and pulled back he is. Like, we've seen him totally sort of retreat from everything.
P.S. I Love You 3000 is something Robert says to his real kids.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
where the line came from, which is kind of fun. This scene for me, Robbie, does so much emotionally. Like, it almost gets me choked up when he's sitting down with Pepper, because it brings me back to everything we're talking about. The
yeah.
first Iron Man, this dynamic, but also how much they've both matured. And my favorite thing about this scene is, like, he has a rock solid wife who actually speaks truth into his life.
Right.
She's the one that says, "Would you ever be able to rest?" That's so genius, because she knows him. He can't stop tinkering. Even this, he said no to the Avengers, right? But then
right.
in it, at night, he still starts working on time travel. He can't not do it.
Which is also huge, because whenever we first met Pepper, she was always trying to pull him back, right? Like, she was
right.
always kind of neurotic. And she was like, "Oh my gosh, I can't take this. I literally can't take the stress. You can't do this. You're gonna die." And now he's looking for an out from her. Like, he's looking almost
right.
for her to be that again.
Right.
And say, "Yeah, you're right. You should stay here." And she won't give that to him because she knows him too well.
Trying to get you to stop has been the one failure of my life.
Gosh.
And I just got chills now when she actually, he said, "I can't help everyone." And she says, "Kind of seems like you can." I got chills. I don't know. Just this dynamic does it for me.
Wow. Yeah. Again, just another example of this movie really giving real respect to the relationships. Like, not just, it's not just lip service. It's not just, oh, isn't it fun to see these characters together that we've seen for so long? It's really digging into the core of their stories, the core of their relationships.
Again, the editing, boom, massive tonal shift. We really haven't had anything very funny 43 minutes into the movie. And we just had a really heavy scene where Tony's weighing these consequences versus what could happen.
Right.
All of a sudden, total tone shift. We have almost a joke of a scene. Professor Hulk running a time machine for Ant-Man, coming back with different, you know, aged Ant-Mans. And I love this right here. The way they both look at, if you watch the scene again, watch how Natasha, when he goes, either it's all a joke or none of it. And then he goes, we're good. Natasha kind of gives like this half-hearted smile, like, yeah, totally. Right. It's so funny.
And that's one of the things that I caught on this last rewatch is there are still some good moments between Professor Hulk and
Nat. You're
right,
I do, Captain America. Yeah, keep going, sorry.
Like, we still get some good, like, their relationship didn't end with Age of Ultron, right? Like, it's like they missed their moment, but you can tell there's still something there.
No, I know. So this actor who played the older version of Scott here in this time travel scene actually passed away shortly after this film.
Oh, no way.
His name was Lee Moore, and he was 93. Okay, but how about this next scene? And then this is one of my favorite funny lines in the whole movie. You know, I love this line.
Yeah.
It's a baby. It's Scott. As a baby, he'll grow. That line, he'll grow, is unbelievable. And you almost miss it because it's not on screen when you hear him yell it. He'll grow.
This Paul Rudd line is so funny to me. I don't know if it was baby me or old me or me.
Or just me. Time travel. What? I see this as a complete success.
That personality is something that we haven't seen in just straight Bruce Banner. Like, you're totally right. Like, I love, and it's so, that's so cool that Mark Ruffalo found a way to merge those two personalities in a way that works like that.
Oh, okay. Chills
this
again.
This scene here.
Well, Robbie, I want to say something about Professor Hulk in a second, but I can't skip this scene, which is, again, another one of those moments. Like, this is a highlight in the film for me. Another one.
Yeah.
That Tony's like, even the entrance is so Tony Stark, right? That he's flying around the corner.
In the Audi.
I love this tiny detail. He overshoots it by like 6 feet.
Right.
And then slowly backs up. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And this is the closest thing we get to Tony Stark able to apologize.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I think Cap knows that too. That's why this moment feels so sincere.
Right.
Oh, Robbie, I'm going to get emotional. Let me guess, he turned him into a baby. It's funny, but these two, Robbie, like, after multiple rewatches, you realize how much justice is done to these two characters.
Yeah.
You could never argue anything. And it gives me chills just seeing them a little bit back on the same team.
Well, and so
God I'm here, right? That's so Tony Stark. Thank God I'm here.
We have to remember, I mean, we talked about
that
scene
smile,
that I love.
That smile from Cap.
At the beginning, yes. At the beginning where Tony's just totally wrecked. But the last time that they had really seen each other before that, when they were both kind of healthy and normal, was the end of Civil War there, where Tony tells Cap, you know, you don't deserve that shield. My father made that shield.
And yet he's going to give it to him again.
Yeah. The line that he gives him here where he says, well, he made it for you. It's like it's a direct callback. And again, both films written by Marcus McFeely. It's like they understand so well these character lines.
Then the score when they're shaking hands underneath. It's so fulfilling for me as a fan.
Well, and this Cap.
You hear the Cap shout out? Yeah, you hear the Cap theme shout out when he grabs the shield. Also, the line from Tony that says resentment is corrosive makes
and
me
I
so happy
it.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hate it. And they're buds again, Robbie. It's happening. Are you hearing this? It's happening. This is the closest thing Tony gets to making amends.
Well, and just seeing Steve hold the shield again. And it's like, you know, I don't know. We talk about how cool Steve looks in Infinity War with the beard and the long hair, and, you know, he's wearing the battle suit, but just him with the tucked in shirt and holding the shield. It's so classic Steve.
It is. This is the scene I want, this taco scene. This is what I wanted to point out. This hit me last night. Just think about how far we've come as viewers of the MCU, Robbie, that The entire thing we're watching is so ridiculous right now, right? Ant-Man is on a break like a normal human trying to eat a taco. A spaceship with a raccoon and a robot land in the middle of the grass, right? Then a cyborg-type Iron Man person falls in, scares him, and only to have a friendly Hulk walk by to give him more tacos, to replace his fallen tacos, and walk away like a mailman. I mean, this is unbelievable. Like, it all works, but everything I just said sounds like the most ridiculous thing on paper you've ever heard, right?
Right.
But think about that. Isn't that so fun, Robbie? That's amazing what I just said.
Oh,
and
no,
that
it's
well, and all the other happening thing, in front of me.
Like, the MCU fan in me, it's been lost on me.
You don't question any of it, though. You don't question any of it.
Oh, right. Well, but the fact that they're getting around in the Guardian ship is also just so fun. Like, that's what Hulk is using to fly over to New Asgard. Like, it's like everything is so interconnected now.
Every single detail matters.
So, Kyle, what is your take on where these Asgardians come from? I know that's been a big question. I had always understood that Thanos killed half of them whenever he kills Loki. And so either the ship is basically literally cut in half, which is why we didn't see Valkyrie, or maybe they were able to evacuate. That's what you think?
I think so, yeah, or evacuate, either one. But I think I'm led to believe that when Thanos' ship pulled up and they start getting bombed, either the ship split in two, or there was like little escape vessels that they launched away, Star Wars style. And then Thanos comes in, kills everyone else, and blows up that ship, but this is the remaining crew. That's why I think you're led to believe. I don't think there's much more to that. For some reason, I'm with you. We get asked that a lot. I don't think it's deeper than that.
So
this is one of my favorite reveals ever in the history of the MCU. Again, and I do want to appreciate how shocking this was, Robbie. Do you agree? Was this one of the most shocking things you'd ever seen in film?
Oh, yeah. I was not prepared for this at all. Even here, in this moment, I don't think that...
And you still don't know.
Then you start to see, like, oh, something about him looks kind of weird.
Well, you think he just has a drinking problem, but then to actually see this...
Right.
Dude, but our theater, like, oh, our theater lost that they laughed so hard.
Yeah.
This is so funny. So I don't want to gloss over how funny it is. It's so funny. And it's so startling, which makes it funnier. And I think it hits on all those levels. But I'm going to spend the rest of this podcast trying to point out actually how good and serious and emotional Chris Hemsworth's performance is, and this decision to have Thor be depressed Thor, how good that is. I'm going to gloss over some of the funniness of it because it's unbelievably funny. But it's so important to comment. Like, guys, everybody deals with grief and shame in different ways.
Right, right.
And I've already commented on how Nat goes back to work and wants to find work to do, right?
Right.
And Hawkeye goes on a killing spree and can't struggle with it and gets anger. It takes his life over. Tony gets bitter and decides to move on and get his own life and actually grows as a human and matures and gets a life, right? We've already seen all those things. And now we're getting to see a guy who has gone through everything ever. And I'm not going to go through all of it. I'm going to miss some of it. But he's lost his brother. He's lost his father. There's been chemistry issues with his brother. He's lost his mother. He's lost his planet. He's never been able to be king, even though he thinks he should have to be. He's meant to be a king, and yet he can't seem to do it right. He leads Asgard astray. And then, in his one act that he thought would save everything, killing Thanos, he failed. And so here is a guy who is now having to deal with that depression.
Right.
And his way is numbing the pain. I mean, that's a very common story.
Oh, sure.
And so I think, I say that all to say, I know I talked a lot, but I want to point out that, like, this scene is so funny, but this right here is so powerful. When Bruce says the name Thanos, Thor's reaction to that is not funny. And it's so moving and fitting for the character. Do you follow what I'm trying to get across
absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also don't want to look over the relationship between Bruce and Hulk and Thor that, again,
so special,
came leaps and bounds forward under Taika's direction, right?
Right. But they all get the chance now to play with those different relationships that everyone would have by splitting them up into these like recruiting things, you know?
Right.
Like this is a special relationship now. And you're right. Taika did move it a long ways down the road.
And I also, I'm glad that you're saying what you are about this being an illustration of the way Thor is dealing with the fallout of his failure, because I think that it is funny, obviously, and it's meant to be funny, but I don't think it has to be an either or. I think that there were a lot of kind of conversations and think pieces after this movie about whether this was making light of depression.
Not at all. Not at all.
And I think it's, you know, it's definitely a thin line, but I think that it threads it really deftly. Because
but like that line, the line of, you know who saved me? It was you. And he goes, Natasha, is like a joke, but then he says you. That hits Thor. He's not funny about that. Then right there he says, why don't you go ask the people of Asgard, the ones that are left anyways. That's depressing. That's not funny.
Right.
It's very well acted, by the way.
By the way, what is that a reference to? You know who saved me? You? Is that a reference to on Sakaar?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. He helped pull him out, not physically, but also emotionally. Right.
Whenever he was coming out of being Hulk for 2 years, and
because
kind of
I think
out.
He, you know, he was so panicked that he was stuck as Hulk,
right?
And then Thor was like, "It's gonna be okay." And remember, sun's getting low,
right?
But
right,
he
right.
did kind of like help him through that, and they obviously grew their friendship there, you know,
too. Right.
So I think he's just saying, like, you were an important person in my life there. Also, I want to move on really fast, but I just got to say, it's so fun for me to see Meek and Korg again. There's a really funny thing where Meek actually throws a piece of pizza in the background when they're mad at Newmaster. It's so funny. Korg's so funny. I love that. That whole thing is hilarious to me. We're now fast forwarding to Ronan going on a killing spree here. And again, fun for me to see. Not fun, but good for me to see that this is how Hawkeye is dealing with his anger and depression, but also it's good tonally, Robbie, to give us a little bout of action there. Just give us a little thing to keep the movie. Yeah. You know, so again, editing wise, so genius that we just had this crazy emotional scene with Thor, funny, emotional. Now we're going to go to dark, not emotional, and a little bit of action.
I've also never realized how much this, and I would love to see if they've spoken about this, but this scene, the aesthetic is taken almost directly from the John Wick movies. I don't know if you've seen those movies, but the way the subtitles come across the scene, I've never caught that until right now, but that has to be intentional.
Yeah, I think so, because this is also more brutal than they're used to as far as he slits his throat. That's not a very Marvel thing, you know? Which I appreciate.
Oh, yeah. And again, I love the Ronan character is another shout out to a comic book story from the 2000s. Brian Michael Bendis, after Hawkeye is thought dead, comes back. And for a long time, you don't know who Ronan is. And then after a good number of issues, you find out that it's Hawkeye and this alter ego.
Yep. P.S., I'm going to check off Avengers Infinity War because there was references earlier, and Thor Ragnarok with that Bruce and Hulk interaction and talking about it. So two more check.
Well, and him saying, oh, you know, Korg and Meek. And oh, yeah, yes. Long time to see.
Yeah, exactly. Beer's in the bucket. Wi-Fi is on the fridge. Yes.
So
this is, again, another friendship that I love that they get a chance to explore.
Yeah. Again, because going back
these
to
these two, we've heard references. Yeah, this is okay. I'm going to count this. Upcoming, the Budapest reference, I'm going to count that as another reference. But this is another powerful friendship, and I love that they get to, you know, dive into this a little further. And if you remember, we kind of get a reference, and hopefully we see this in Black Widow, her own movie, but we get a reference that Clint was there for her when she was doing bad things, kind of a villain, And Clint kind of pulled her out.
Right, which is what I was talking about with that role reversal.
Right, now here she is. Giving him hope, you know?
And this is such a powerful relationship too, because you have to think through all of this craziness, they're the normal people, like the truly normal, not in any way superhuman people out of this whole team. And they have kind of had to, that one, they were really close beforehand and have been friends and partners, but have kind of had to hold on to each other and take care of each other. And that it adds this whole other layer to their relationship now.
And then how about an unbelievable tone shift again? So right after that huge emotional moment, we get the Big Lebowski, Thor, back at the Avengers facility with the track, you know?
Right. Which also, how great is it to see them all back in the Avengers facility again?
Robbie, it does my heart so good, and it makes me so sad that it won't ever be the same again.
I know.
I'm just being honest. It makes me so sad that part of my life is over. Because even if they come back as Avengers, I'll love it. I'll love it. I'm not saying I won't, but I'm just going to miss some of this dynamic, you know?
Right. And you know what's funny is in that moment, I'm thinking the only thing that would make me feel better is to see them all in Avengers Tower again. And guess what? This movie also gives us that.
Yep. This scene of them doing the test trial, I think, again, is another bit of exposition they have to do. They're trying to explain to the audience what time travel is.
But yeah,
the only way to do that without it getting crazy is let's make it funny or emotional. Like they go very intentionally about how they're going to explain time travel, you know?
Right.
I think it's so funny. It's so funny to include Rhodey basically saying what some of us are thinking, right?
Right.
Like, let's just go back to when baby Thanos exactly. is a baby and strangle him. And I love that first line. First of all, that's horrible. I still don't know that I fully understand the explanation here, although it is worth saying that they spent hours and hours with actual quantum physics,
quantum physicists.
Yes, trying to get, this is basically the quantum physicist's explanation through Hulk. Does that make sense? Like, this is as close as they can get to explaining what they think could happen.
Yeah.
Which I love.
So I think I have a good sense of how it works. I don't think we have time, but we should maybe have a little Marvel at some point where we just talk through the time travel theory of Endgame, because I think it's really interesting.
Right. I think that's fair. I would love to do it.
I love the move to just to let them be us in that moment where they're like, well, here's how it works in Back to the Future and Hot Tub Time Machine, because that's what we're all thinking. And it's like, no, this is totally different the way we're imagining it.
Right. So,
and again, that's so quantum realm, like the visuals are so similar to what we've seen before in some of the Ant-Man film stuff. And I love that it links that in.
Well, absolutely. I was going to say, this is a tiny detail that doesn't matter, but how they envision the actual machine is so cool to me.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. But again, to keep it with the quantum realm vibe makes more sense for the MCU than just a machine. I don't know.
Right.
I just, how it's visualized is perfect.
Yeah.
I also think it's amazing that Hawkeye is the one to volunteer for this because he has nothing else to lose in his mind. He's already been on a killing spree and he's lost his family, whatever. But B, he would be anxious to try. Like, this is a dangerous thing, right? Like they don't know if he's going to come back, but he's okay with not coming back here because he's already lost everything. And if he's going to get stuck somewhere, might as well be stuck here, right?
I also love that he time travels back to that barn and we see that tractor that Tony went out to work on in Age of Ultron. Yeah.
Such a powerful moment for him here.
Yeah.
Also, I added that this daughter of his is actually Joe Russo's daughter. Joe Russo's other daughter is the daughter that wants to take a selfie with Hulk. Did you know that? So his two girls are in this movie. She's the girl in that scene. Thought that was fun.
Oh, and this is heartbreaking, right? Because he wants so badly to see her and pulled away right before he can.
Right. But at least he gets to take the glove as proof that it works and he gets a glimpse that it's possible, you know?
That's true. You know, I actually never caught that he grabbed the glove.
Yeah.
That you can grab something back from there and bring it back. Yeah, because that's how you know the Infinity Stones.
That's
the
point, though. See, he looks at it right there and says, like, see, it works. See? And then it kind of confirms Tony's excitement about it, which I love.
This is another really fun scene.
Can I say something else, by the way?
Yeah.
Before Robbie and I created our own song for our theme for this podcast, we were going to use this track right here. This is what we wanted to use as our theme.
But
we didn't go through the work of licensing it and all that, but thought it'd be fun, a fitting thing for a podcast to have the jazz version of the Avengers theme.
It's a PowerPoint presentation of the whole MCU history. I love it.
I know. I love it. Again, they're very conscious, though, that this is that. Like, they're conscious of the fact that they're having to explain this all to people.
Right.
Oh, but this is one of the funniest parts of the whole movie.
Yeah.
When Thor is sleeping, but this explanation he's going to give of the Reality Stone is, again, kind of a meta joke on Thor Dark World, right? A little bit?
Well, it's funny because the only Reality Stone explanation they show is the only Infinity Stone explanation they show is the Reality Stone because they know that that's the movie people are least likely to be familiar with.
Right. Oh, but this is so funny here. How he's messing with his eyes as he's just like waking up. And, ooh, dark elves, scary. Ooh. Robbie, this is unbelievable.
Well, again, talking about this, talking about each scene doing so much work, like this scene, one, gives us a lot more insight into where Thor is mentally and emotionally.
Every time they give the comedy, though, they give you his emotional depression, like when he starts crying over his mom.
Right.
Or Jane.
So it gives us a lot of Thor character work. It gives us comedy, and it also fills in some narrative stuff that, again, I think a lot of people would have maybe missed out or had forgotten about and not realized the connection between Thor the Dark World. And, you know, it's like they're doing so much here.
The shots of all the Avengers trying to, like, get him to stop, like, talking him off the ledge, like Paul Rudd, kind of half smiling, like, oh, you're losing your mind. And then Hulk doing the cut it off, cut him off. And then Tony, pretty funny.
No, I'll take a Bloody Mary.
Yes. Should we get you some breakfast, is that what he says?
Yeah.
Eggs? I'll have a Bloody Mary, thank you very much. It's really funny, Robbie. Right. I know a couple people, like Kyle Cousins, his dad, this is totally not his scene. Like Kyle said, quote, it had his dad in stitches, Fat Thor. Like it was making him laugh so hard. And again, this is a fun little Easter egg. For any fan who wants to just feel so good about themselves, Google Avengers Endgame audience reactions. And they recorded some big audiences on the opening night and their reactions to this film. And it makes me as happy as I've ever felt, Robbie. People were laughing so hard at moments, but like the big moments got like huge cheers to the point where you can't even hear the audio. And it's so awesome. It feels like you're at a live sporting event.
Everything about this scene is just
like
so...
domestic Avengers.
Yes. And I love it because the most we've gotten of this is like that party scene in Age of Ultron, right? And we talked about how much we love that. But this one especially, just having Hulk and Tony and Natasha laying down and kind of brainstorming is so fun. Shut the front door.
And eating Chinese food and a little Easter egg. Do you see that Hulk is actually eating Ben and Jerry's Hulk of Burning Fudge?
The one that he said
he loved? Come on, that's fun.
And I love that they literally call it Time Heist.
Yes, I know. And this shot of them all looking at the time machine like they're going to have to go do it, that was in the trailer, but two key things were edited out. Professor Hulk was edited out, and Fat Thor was not sitting in the background eating there.
Yep.
Huge. They want to give that away. And here we go. We got to just comment on how epic this is to hear another Captain America speech. Don't you love this, Robbie? Is this you?
Of course. And the music in the background. Think about
this. Yes, the Avengers theme playing. All of them wearing a uniform, listening to a speech from Captain America. This is my dream coming true in front of my eyes.
You know, I saw a little Easter egg online, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but that shot of all their fists together. Have you seen this?
That looks like
the proof that Tony Stark has a heart, the arc reactor. Yeah.
No idea if that was intentional, but it's a good find.
Yeah.
I love the meta commentary on, again, Robbie, how about another moment that fills your heart so good right there? Come on, right?
Yep.
Tony looking at Cap at that speech and them like meeting eyes and like having a moment together.
Yeah, that's what I love. It's
like they're becoming like the parents of the Avengers and it makes me so happy.
This is one of the funniest lines to me.
Yes.
As promises go, that was pretty lame.
Subtly for me, I actually love how Hawkeye goes like, okay. All right.
If
like he's acknowledging he's listening to a raccoon talk to him. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all so ridiculous.
Hit us with the theme.
And they're so self-conscious.
Hit us with the theme. Get the machine fired up. This is so cool, Robbie. This is peak Avengers. Here we go.
Yep.
Nebula's even there.
And really, up until now, we haven't even been off on like the main plot.
Right.
And here we go.
And that is where we're going to pause. That is the end of our part one because right there, even though we're not halfway, is where tonally this movie shifts like crazy. We're about to get into the bowels of act two of this film. And Robbie and I both thought it was more fitting to cover act two and three together, right? Than just splitting that down the middle because they just now went into time travel for the first time ever. And we're going to have to wait to see how that unfolds until part two.
Yes. Gosh.
Robbie, this format has been so fun for me because I get to have the emotional, visceral responses to this movie while I'm talking about it. And it's been very fun. I hope for our listeners out there that, A, you got a chance to watch Infinity War with our commentary that we released because it actually is kind of fun that way. And I'm going to try to do the same thing for this one.
Yeah.
Because it's just been very fun for Robbie and I to do it that way. But this was only part one. Please, please stay tuned for the epic conclusion of Avengers Endgame, part two.
And if for any reason you have not heard our prior rewatch episodes, if you're just coming in now, we are so glad you're here. We think you'll really enjoy it. If you go back through the whole rewatch with us, we've kind of been on this journey together. And I think part of what's making this so fun for us is it's all this stuff that we've been kind of keeping an eye on, all these relationships we've been tracking are really coming to fruition here in the ultimate way. So go check some of those episodes out. Meet us back here for Avengers Endgame Part 2, where we will finish our Infinity Saga rewatch here on Friends From Work. See you next time.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.